You're listening to PX Pulse, a regular podcast bringing you fresh voices on critical issues facing HIV prevention research today. Health leaders around the world are in the midst of planning and debating what will be a major transformation to global health as they create a new architecture to deal with pandemics. These will be new structures and systems and new financing for pandemic prevention, preparedness, and response, or PPPR for short. For example, there's the newly created Pandemic Fund. There's the Pandemic Accord, which is attempting to build consensus on how to protect against future pandemics. There's UN high-level meetings and declarations on universal healthcare, or UHC, and on pandemic readiness. A lot is happening. Chris Collins, the CEO and president at Friends of the Global Fight Against AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria, has been tracking this work. He was one of several authors who recently published an article in PLOS Global Health. They issued a kind of warning and a call to action about what needs to be done for all this planning to work. Welcome, Chris.
Well, thanks very much for making me part of this.
Obviously, it's a good thing that there is so much attention on pandemic preparedness, on pandemic readiness, because it's in everyone's interest to see effective global coordination. Viruses respect no political boundaries. So as you track the process and the decisions being made, what are people getting right and what are they getting wrong?
I think in the discussion on pandemic preparedness, one thing we're getting right is broad recognition that we failed, that we simply did not have the systems in place, the personnel in place. We didn't have the global collaboration that we needed to respond effectively and equitably to this new pandemic. One thing we're getting right also is people are beginning to understand that you need strong health systems, that those are the foundations of pandemic preparedness. And that pandemics have impacts way beyond health. COVID-19 led to increased violence against women. It led to civil society being shut down in countries around the world. Another thing we've learned is that trust is at the center of effective pandemic response. And so where you have responsive health systems, where people are trusting of the people running those systems, you have a better chance at a good outcome. What we're failing to do, first of all, is rise to the occasion in terms of the financing. We have been chronically underinvesting in global health forever, and that continues. COVID-19 so far has not led to increased financing for preparedness and health systems and fighting current epidemics. So we need to turn that around. Another thing I think we're not getting right at this point is we're not seeing the interconnectedness of health programming. Too often we're talking about pandemic preparedness separate of programs and systems that are working right now. So I think one of the things left to do in this pandemic preparedness conversation is talk much more about responses to HIV, TB, and malaria. What role did they play in COVID-19? What role can they play in the future? What's the role for the Global Fund and for Gavi, the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization? How can we leverage these systems in ways that really deliver preparedness and helps us fight epidemics that are all around us right now? So I think it really is time to take the lessons learned out of COVID-19 and build a new vision that brings together a greatly increased financing for global health and also integrates current responses to diseases, health systems, and preparedness, and doesn't look at those things as being separate.
Integrate the current response to HIV, TB, and malaria, investment in health systems overall, and investment in preparedness. The vision for pandemic readiness should integrate all of this with new resources. So what happens if it doesn't happen, if these remain each in their own silo? You know, what's the risk and how likely is it in your view?
So we need to realize the connections between these things, that health systems that are functioning today and responsive to people's needs are the foundation of pandemic preparedness for the future, that the epidemics of AIDS, TB, and malaria continue to rage and claim millions of lives every year. That work is far from done. So if we come at this in a siloed way, all the new attention and resources we lavish on preparedness, we miss that opportunity not to get ahead of AIDS, TB, and malaria, not to think about how to make health systems more responsive to people in today's needs. It doesn't have to be that way at all.
Yeah. The HIV response has been one of the most effective efforts against a disease in living memory. There's many strengths to the HIV response that could be expanded for pandemic readiness. I'm thinking of a whole laundry list. The capacity to develop drugs for treatment and prevention, programs that deliver those interventions, advocacy that fights for those programs, funding structures, approaches to data gathering and how to apply that data, and principles and practices for community engagement and community leadership. There's a lot that's been accomplished in the HIV response that arguably should be a model for how to fight the next pandemic. So fill out your vision for me. Is the HIV response the right foundation for prevention, preparedness, and response for the next pandemic?
What my colleagues and I wrote about in PLOS in January was just observing what an important role the HIV response, both its infrastructure, but also its core values, played in tackling COVID-19, and that means something for the future. The first thing to say is the global HIV response is off track right now. We are not online to end HIV as an epidemic by 2030. We've got huge disparities in terms of access to prevention and care, and key populations and young women and girls are increasingly marginalized. We need new investments in the HIV response just to get ahead of the HIV epidemic. But the other piece of that is to note that the AIDS movement really has always been a movement for health. It's been a movement for health equity. And now at a time when policymakers around the world, communities, public health leaders are talking about the future of the global health architecture and preparedness, we need to talk about what the AIDS movement, that infrastructure and those values, what role that can play in the future of pandemic preparedness. So we need new investments beyond HIV. I think we can build onto much of the infrastructure of the HIV response and achieve many of the things we want to do in pandemic preparedness. Part of that means investing through programs that are delivering HIV services right now and finding the opportunities in those programs to build out and do more.
Got it. My sense is there's a real risk right now of this going the wrong way. What do we need to do to deliver that message? Who needs to get this message? And what do advocates need to do to make sure that message gets delivered?
Well, I think policymakers all over the world need to understand we've got to stop the chronic underinvestment in global health, and we've got to find the connections between current responses, preparedness, and ultimately moving towards stronger health systems. And actually, I think we absolutely must seize the opportunity this year to change the conversation in that direction. So the G7 coming up in May is that first stop along that opportunity calendar, I think. And I was very impressed with an op-ed that the Prime Minister of Japan, Prime Minister Kishida, wrote in Lancet in January, where he's really making the connections between investments in preparedness and universal health coverage and responding to AIDS, TB, and malaria. I really hope that since he's hosting G7, that he can bring that vision and we can start to see articulated in the communique coming out of the G7, this interconnectedness of our responses and the need for additional financing. But this year, we've also got G20. We've got three high-level meetings at the UN. And so I think there are a lot of opportunities to shape how we talk about global health.
So far, are other leaders showing a similar commitment to the Japanese Prime Minister? Are the decision makers who are around the table planning for the pandemic fund and how they're going to structure a consensus around pandemic readiness, are they making those connections too? What are you seeing so far? Is it giving you confidence?
So far, I'm not seeing the boldness I would like to see. We had a very successful Global Fund replenishment last fall, but we need to understand we're still severely underinvesting in global health. And so I think the boldness on the financing hasn't happened, although there are nascent discussions there. And then I haven't seen policymakers talk about the interconnectedness of health programming in the way I would have liked to see, the role that the Global Fund and Gavi can play in responding to health needs today and being ready for disease threats of tomorrow. The ways in which health system strengthening that can deliver today is intimately connected to pandemic preparedness, and that is connected to universal health coverage.
And it sounds like that's a key role for advocates to start really amplifying this message. That, you know, the message is invest in and expand programs that are delivering HIV services right now. Find the opportunities in those programs to build out and do more, as you said. Looking for strategies that prepare for the future by doing better today against today's health threats.
Advocacy is going to be absolutely essential this year, as every year. This year, I think we've got an opportunity to have dialogues on some of the really big questions. What should the architecture look like in global health? What is the financing needs? How do we think creatively about the financing and about programming?
Okay, so I don't want to overlook some of the complexity of this. PEPFAR and the Global Fund are among the entities that have been central to advances against the epidemic. They've been core to some of the most fundamental systems for health that have made the response to HIV successful. There's warnings about undermining PEPFAR and the Global Fund and diminishing the HIV response. Are these risks real concerns? And if they are, what can we do to mitigate them and ensure that we strengthen the HIV response as we leverage it for pandemic preparedness?
If you're saying, let's take the HIV platform and leverage that to do more in health, be it preparedness, other areas of health systems, there's absolutely a risk in that. There's the risk that if that doesn't come with new resources, there's a real chance that the reach of HIV services goes down. And we can't have that. We're off track with the HIV response as it is. So if the HIV response and the systems we've talked about, Global Fund, PEPFAR, are to play a stepped up role in preparedness, we've got to bring new resources to them to do that work. The only way this works, leveraging the HIV platform for preparedness, is if it enables us to have better services for people living with HIV. They need a fully responsive health system. So the other thing, though, I think that's important to recognize is there's a risk if we don't talk about the role that the HIV platform and other disease platforms can have in preparedness. If the HIV response isn't part of that dialogue, we really lose an opportunity. And that's because, first of all, the HIV response brings a lot of core values that I think all of us want in preparedness: community engagement, human rights-based approach, ensuring that key populations and marginalized people aren't left behind. Those are things we've got to build into preparedness. Those are things we have to build in to universal health coverage. The way it can happen is if we bring new money to HIV programming and if we really work to find the synergies so this actually makes services stronger for people living with HIV. You know, the AIDS response is often called exceptional, AIDS exceptionalism. And people have spoken lovingly of that, and they've said that that's a problem that needs to change. But the reason it's called exceptional is it has a lot of resources to do the job. It's founded on basic human rights principles, community engagement, and activism. Those are things that shouldn't be exceptional. Those are things that should be part of the future of global health. We never saw more evidence of that than when the research came out several months ago showing the close relationship between trust and success in responding to COVID-19. One of the ways that you build trust in communities is you involve communities in decision-making, you involve community systems in delivering programs, you respect people's human rights, and you get them good, high-quality information. There's a whole lot of values that come with the HIV response that we need to build into the future of global health.
As leaders rethink and refashion how global health is structured and how money should be spent to prepare for the next pandemic, security in global health is on the line, equity in global health is on the line. None of these decisions should be made without leadership from the communities who'll be most impacted. Find the articles mentioned in this podcast, other resources, and opportunities to join the conversation at avac.org/PXPulse. I'm Jean Barron. Thanks for listening.